This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What happens when the battle for the soul of a small town gets fought in the most unexpected of arenas, the dance floor? This 80s flick, inspired by true events, dared to answer that question and became one of the most influential movies of the decade. In the small Utah town, the spirit of youth is a whimpered song until the new student from the big city of Chicago decides it's time to crank up the volume. With his rebellious heart and dancing feet, he challenges the status quo, winning allies and sparking a cultural showdown that had audiences rooting for freedom and dancing in the aisles. So get ready to cut loose, kick off those Sunday shoes, and dance your butt off as Bethany Wells, J.B. Huffman, and I discuss Footloose from 1984 on this episode of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast.
Folks are going to give you problems because you're an outsider. You're dangerous.
You know, I'm trying to fit in here, and every door is getting slammed in my face.
Just because he hasn't lived in this town for 20 years doesn't make him a troublemaker.
Is there a law against loud music?
What's that attitude for?
It's my fight, you know. It's with the town. It's not with one guy.
Do you want to kiss me?
Someday. Footloose, rated PG.
Now playing at a Stephen Hill Music.
I'm Tim Williams, the mastermind behind the mic at the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. Joining me on each epic episode is a guest co-host who's as crazy about 80s flicks as they are about wearing parachute pants and solving Rubik's Cubes. We're diving into nostalgic treasures we saw at the local theater, rented on VHS tapes, or discovered on cable TV. From blockbusters that make you say,
I feel the need for speed.
To hidden gems that'll have you screaming,
they're here.
It's a blast to relive these old memories and share our thoughts on what made these movies so special. We reminisce about our first time watch experiences, share our favorite scenes, and even discover fascinating behind the scenes tales about the cast and crew along the way. Haven't hit that subscribe button yet? What are you waiting for?
Come on, do it.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. And hey, while you're at it, be a pal and drop us a written review along with a 5-star rating to tell us what you think about us.
The sportos, the motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Take a day off and come hang out with us on social media. Just search 80s Flick Flashback on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And don't forget to bookmark 80sflickflashback.com for more gnarly content.
Get out of town. I didn't know you did anything creative.
Want to crank it all the way up to 11? Become a supporter on buymeacoffee.com for only $5 a month.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Click the link in our episode show notes, and while you're there, soak up the extra trivia and fun stuff that didn't make it into today's show. Thanks again for tuning in. Now, let's get right into today's episode.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome in, everybody. So glad to have you for this very fun and exciting episode that is one that I've wanted to do for a long time. And finally, I was going to do it this year. This was the year we're going to do it. And so happy to do it with two of my favorite co-hosts. We're talking about Footloose, the movie that made Kevin Bacon a huge movie star. and made everybody want to dance again, I think, before Dirty Dancing wanted them to dance dirty. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. But let me introduce our co-host for this episode. You know her, you love her. Bethany Wells is back. How you doing, Bethany?
I'm doing great. I love this movie. I'm so excited.
And we're excited to have you, and excited to have from Manly Movies, JB Huffman. How you doing, JB?
I'm doing great ever since you said I'm one of your favorite guests. So that makes me happy. And to talk about, as Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy would say,
yes,
know, one of the greatest American heroes
absolutely
of all time, Mr. Kevin Bacon.
That's right. That's right.
Ruby loves Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And so watching this, she was like, oh, Kevin Bacon. I was like, yeah.
I understand the reference now. Yeah.
I understood that reference.
Yes, great. All right, so let's jump right in. So we'll start with Bethany. When did you see Footloose for the first time?
Oh, man. It was probably middle school, maybe early high school. It was something, I know both my mom loved it, but also my stepmom had like this really funny story. She always told about how when it was in theaters, her and her cousins would, I'm sure the statute of limitations is over, so I can tell this story and she won't get in trouble. But she and her cousins would sneak into the theater just to watch the final prom scene.
Right.
And they did that like over and over again. And so I always remember that story, and it just makes me laugh. And when it gets to that part, I'm always thinking of her and her cousins sneaking in to go see that movie. So it was probably then when I first, or early high school when I saw it for the first time.
I will say sneaking into other movies was much easier to do in the 80s and probably early 90s, much more easy than it is now. Not that I'm condoning that behavior, but as a kid or a teenager, yes, I do have a story past limitations where these are 90s movies, so it doesn't fit this podcast, but a friend of mine from high school, we wanted to go see Flatliners, another Kevin Bacon movie. So it does connect. And we were not allowed to see that because it was rated R. Neither one of us were 18, but we knew this theater would let us. The theater wouldn't let us. So we bought tickets for Weekend at Bernie's instead. Mm. No, it wasn't Weekend at Bernie's. What was it? It was something else. It was like a comedy, a PG comedy that we did not watch. And we went and saw Flatliners instead. And I remember sitting in the theater thinking, I'm so bad. I'm such a rebel. Such a rebel to watch this.
Absolutely.
That's R-rated horror movie. Yeah. So, but
I still think it's so wholesome that her like big bad is that she broke it just to watch the final scene.
Yeah.
Because it's not like she could own it on VHS or anything. Like, that's the only way she could go see it. And she just wanted to watch that one scene where Kevin Bacon screams, "Let's dance."
Right. Right.
It's funny. Yeah, funny. Like, even now in 2024, my local theater, if it's not like a prime time, if it's not like, you know, 7 o'clock at night, if it's like for a matinee or whatever, which I'll take my kids to a matinee on Saturday or Sunday or whatever, and I always buy them tickets. But literally every single time I take them, there's like, you buy the tickets in one place and then you go in another place. There's never anybody working over there. So you could literally walk in there and just walk back. But obviously I don't, because I'm
right. Right, right.
I do have morals.
Once again, this is not behavior we condone. We're just making observations.
Yeah. I've never done this. I would like to put that out there on the podcast. Okay. I've never done that.
That was the one and only time that I did that.
Was it worth it?
I think so. Yeah, we loved the movie. That was one of my favorite movies. I've watched it again recently. It doesn't hold up as well, but it's still for you had Kiefer Sutherland, Kevin Bacon, and Julia Roberts. For the three of them to be in a movie, it's definitely worth watching. It's not the greatest of plots, but it's still entertaining with the three of them. And then Oliver Platt, who's not as big of a name, but if you know who he is, he's good in it too. So, all right. So JB, when did you see Footloose for the first time?
Believe it or not, first time I watched it was about 2 years ago. Like I told y'all before, I've have some history with this movie, which we will talk about later.
Yes.
And obviously I grew up in the 80s and I was around this movie. I've seen it in bits and pieces on TV. My mom was a bigger fan of Dirty Dancing and I watched that a lot.
Yeah.
But Footloose was never something that I ever actually watched from beginning to end. But, you know, when I watched it 2 years ago, I was like, I remembered all these scenes, and I just kind of put them all together.
Yeah.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No more plot holes. I understand why they did it. Yeah.
Now it all makes sense.
And right, right.
The complexities of this plot.
Yes, I was gonna say, it's such a complex plot. But, yeah.
Funny story, though, like, my wife, the town that she grew up in Southwest Missouri, the town next to it is called Purdy, and supposedly, like, it's not necessarily based on it, because I think it happened either about the same time or a year before, a year after, but that high school there did not allow dancing up until like the mid 80s or something. So it's kind of cool. Like, they always say, oh, that's about Purdy, you know, like, it's
I have heard that Purdy was like one of the inspirations.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. The research I have, and we'll get into it here in a few minutes, was Elmore City, Oklahoma, but it does reference that there were a lot of other counties or cities had old laws in the books, like from the 1800s, that had not been updated. And some were enforcing it and some weren't, but that was, it was more common than you would think in 1984. Yeah. All right. So for me, honestly, I was trying to remember, I'm pretty sure, like, we were good Southern Baptist, you know, family, church going family. And, you know, if you know anything about the Southern Baptist, you know, dancing is not allowed in the Southern Baptist church. So this one was a little too close to home. So my parents were a little bit like, do we want my kids to see this? Because it's going to like cause some issues. But my mom, who's always been a little bit more liberal than my dad, like, she really, like, I think she really wanted to see it, because we kept hearing good things about it. And it was it winning at the box office, and it was all this stuff. Of course, the songs were all over the radio, which is why me and my sister wanted to see it. And so I think we didn't actually see it until it made it to the Dollar Theater. And then I think by that point, we were like, I think we kind of wore my dad down. He's like, well, I'm not going to go see it, but y'all can go watch it. And so it was me, my mom, my sister went, and I remember seeing it and really enjoying it a lot and really liking it. And, you know, I thought they handled it well. For Hollywood to present the religious community in somewhat of a positive light, or at least redemptive in some ways, like, I like that. And we're jumping into it, but I like that John Lithgow's character, he is kind of seen as the big meanie at the beginning, but you see a character arc for him where he's like, I can't be the moral compass for the whole town. People have to make their own decisions. That was good. But I remember, even after we saw it, like, I think we saw it like right when it got to the Dollar Theater, and I remember driving by that theater for like the next 2 months, and it was still playing. Like, it played for a long time. Like, they just, and this was before, you know, it was on digital, you know, like, VHS was around, but you weren't going to see it on VHS for at least like 2 years probably. And then cable wouldn't get it until like a year later. So, but I remember just driving, like, wow, this Footloose is still playing. Like, that was the thing every Friday, drive by. Is it still there? Is it still there? Oh, it's still there. You know, like, the week when it was finally gone.
Watch the prom scene, Tim.
Right. Yeah. All right. So how long had it been since you rewatched it before rewatching it for the podcast? Is this one that you watch on a regular basis? So you saw it 2 years ago. Have you watched it again since then before this week? Or
let's see. No. Not. And yeah, but it's something that, like, I know all the scenes, and so it's like I haven't had to go back and revisit it, but I plan to, you know, eventually. It's something that I probably would keep on the rotation every couple of years, because I don't rewatch a whole lot of movies. I just don't. And so I kind of get a hankering to watch something every 2 or 3 years or so.
What about you, Bethany?
I love this movie. I probably watched it maybe a year ago. I was introducing it to Ruby because, like I said, she got really into Guardians of the Galaxy. And we had watched it, and I think she had seen the part where he was talking about Footloose. And we were like, do you just want to watch Footloose? Because it's a really great movie. And we watched it. And even Ruby enjoyed it watching it then. And it's just one, I think every few years I pop it in. It's a good comfort watch. You don't have to pay super close attention to it.
Right.
And
right.
The music is just incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Every song is a banger. And so it's great. It's great to have on in the background.
The 80s in general, man, it's like the greatest soundtracks ever from the 80s.
I know it's not this movie, but I remember my mom had the cassette tape for Cocktail. Is that 80s? Mm-hmm.
Yes, 89.
Yeah. So she had the cassette tape of that soundtrack, and she would play it in the car, and me and my sister mm-hmm. would beg her to play Kokomo, but we would yeah. say, Aruba, Jamaica, mama, Aruba, Jamaica, mama.
Love it. Love it. I remember buying the DVD for this at Walmart for like $5, probably like 20 years ago. And I remember like one night when me and Tyra were married for a couple of years, we were just like, I think it was like either we had not had cable for a while, or we just, nothing good was on. I was like, we're just going to pick a movie from the DVD collection. And we watched, and that was the first time I had seen it probably since I was, you know, a teenager, and really enjoyed, like, I remember liking it a lot then. I probably haven't watched it all the way through since then. Tyra and I were talking about it earlier, and she was like, well, you just watched this last year. And I was like, no, I didn't. I said, you were watching it. I think it was on Freeform or one of the regular channels, cable channels. I said, I know I walked in the room a couple of times because you didn't start it from the beginning. I really enjoyed rewatching it. It had been a good long while before I'd seen it, but I've seen it so many times. There's not much that I don't know about what's going to happen, but mm-hmm. it does hold up. It does hold up pretty well overall. I mean,
I think it almost holds up too well. There's some stuff in it where you're just like, I hate that this still feels relatable at times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 So the fashion is fun. Like the opening sequence with the shoes, watching it today, so I was like, man, we had some interesting shoe choices back then. My favorite is still the 80s and leg warmers. Like, I didn't realize our ankles were so cold in the
80s. Magical.
But, and how they had to have them over the heel of the shoe. And I'm like, how did you not fall and slip back then? But you know, that wasn't. You know,
right now, I've got a space heater at my feet, so leg warmers sounds great.
And now, these messages.
Are you a fan of movies and TV shows inspired by comics? Ready for a podcast that dives deep into the thrilling world of adaptations? Well, look no further. Welcome to Moving Panels, the podcast where we discuss movies and TV shows based on, inspired by, and adapted from the world of comic books. This is your go-to podcast for all things comics on screen. I'm your host, Laramie Wells, and every Monday we explore the dynamic universe where ink meets action. We break down the classics, reveal hidden gems, and uncover the creative process behind your favorite adaptations. Subscribe to Moving Panels now on your favorite podcast platform and join us on this epic journey through the pages of comics and onto the big screen. Remember, new episodes drop every Monday. Don't miss out. Moving Panels, where every panel has a story and every adaptation is a blockbuster. Subscribe today, and I'll see you on the other side of the page.
So let's jump into story origin and pre-production. A lot of this, I think, is fascinating stuff that I really did not know about the movie until now. So as we mentioned earlier, Footloose is loosely based on the town, or one of the towns is based on, is Elmore City, Oklahoma. The town had banned dancing since its founding in 1898 in an attempt to decrease the amount of heavy drinking. One advocate of the dancing ban was the reverend from the nearby town of Hennepin. His name was F.R. Johnson. He said, quote, "No good has ever come from a dance. If you have a dance, somebody will crash it, and they'll be looking for only two things, women and booze. When boys and girls hold each other, they get sexually aroused. You can believe what you want, but one thing leads to another," end quote. Because of the ban on dancing, the town never held a prom. In February of 1980, the junior class of Elmore City's high school made national news, and they requested permission to hold a junior prom, and it was granted. The request to overturn the ban in order to hold the prom was met with a 2-2 decision from the school board when the school board president, Raymond Lee, broke the tie with the words, "Let them dance."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I like to think of the quote that the reverend's wife, Diane Wiest, says is, you know, we used to just look at each other and get excited.
Right.
And I think it shows, like, especially towards the beginning of the movie, it doesn't matter if music or dancing is banned. Kids gonna be kids.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was evident that Ariel is a rebel
to
the core. Like, she was, you know, what you would consider the traditional PK or preacher's kid. You know, she's going to be the rebel. So with music or not, wasn't going to change how she was going to, you know, live her life at that time. All right. So Dean Pritchard, the scriptwriter, came up with the idea for Footloose as far back as 1979. So of course, you know, we talked about the other cities that were similar to that. He teamed up with Melnick's indie prod, who set the production up at 20th Century Fox in 1981. Pritchard wrote the screenplay, his first, and most of the lyrics, however, Fox put in a turnaround. So he originally wrote it as a straight-up musical. Like, he had songs in mind, which I thought was fascinating because, and we'll talk about it in a minute, he actually co-wrote, and if you watch the credits, he co-wrote every single song that made it on the soundtrack.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting because there's some interesting songs. Like, I mean, I just thought they were just cool songs they pulled together. But no, he co-wrote every single song, and it had a purpose for its scene in the movie.
Well, it's funny that you say it was meant to be a musical because it feels like a musical.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Which I guess is why it transitioned into a musical.
Turned into a musical, yeah.
Yeah, eventually. So there's a website that I go to called fastrewind.com that has a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff from movies. And it's kind of a, they allow people to submit personal stories. So if they were a part of the filming or if it filmed in their town, then people write in stories. And so this is one that I read on there. I have to believe that it's true, but it seems like this one doesn't seem too far-fetched. But this is what one of the people wrote there. He said, in preparation for this movie, Dean Pitchford visited several communities in Oklahoma. One of those was the town I grew up in, Ardmore, Oklahoma. In November of 1980, he came to our school, sat with us in class, interviewed students, and spoke to us a little about why he was there. All we knew was he was writing a story for a movie about high school kids. After seeing the movie, I felt he possibly got one of the ideas for one of the scenes from us. When the kids crossed the state line and a bridge to go dance at the bar, it was like a normal Saturday night for us. We lived only 30 miles from the Texas-Oklahoma state line. At that time, the legal drinking age in Texas was 19, and there were several bars that would let underage drinkers in. We crossed the Red River Bridge many weekends on our trips to party. So I was like, thought that was pretty interesting. So I did read a couple of things that he did do a lot of research at high schools to, you know, to get the story. He wanted this to seem, you know, as authentic as possible. So I thought that was cool. So in 1982, Paramount Pictures made a pay or play deal for the film when negotiations with Herbert Ross, the director, initially stalled. Ron Howard was approached to direct the film, but he turned it down to direct Splash instead. Michael Cimino was hired by Paramount to direct the film, his first since Heaven's Gate. After a month working on the film, the studio fired Cimino, who was making extravagant demands for the production, including demanding an additional $250,000 for his work. And they ended up firing him and going back and hiring Herbert Ross. One of the other things I read about that was the Heaven's Gate director, Michael Cimino, he wanted to completely rewrite the script and wanted to make it much more extravagant. That's why he was trying to bring in all this other stuff. So glad it didn't go that way. We all know what such a big hit Heaven's Gate was, if you are familiar with 80s Cimino. Cimino. 80s
Cimino.
Cimino rolls. Well, his name is Cimino, so I got those two things together. But Heaven's Gate is like one of the biggest bombs of the 80s. So that's
cool. I'll say it was nominated for several Razzies. So
yeah, that tells you anything. Pretty terrible. So a little bit about the director, Herbert Ross. I was telling Bethany before we started filming or started recording that we've covered a Herbert Ross film before that she wasn't aware of, and neither was I until I started doing research. But Ross was an American actor and choreographer and director and producer who worked predominantly in the theater and film. He was nominated for 2 Academy Awards and a Tony Award. He is known for directing musical and comedies such as Goodbye, Mr. Chips in 1969, Play It Again, Sam in 72, The Goodbye Girl in 77, and Pennies from Heaven in 1981. His other films included Protocol in 84 with Goldie Hawn and Secret of My Success with Michael J. Fox in 1987. His one big hit was the play adaptation of Steel Magnolias in 1989, which Bethany and I covered a couple of seasons ago. In the 90s, he directed My Blue Heaven in 1990, which we just discussed a few episodes ago, True Colors in 91, Undercover Blues in 93, and Boys on the Side in 1995. He is also known for his work on Broadway as a choreographer for productions with Barbara Streisand, Stephen Sondheim, Richard Rodgers, and Arthur Lawrence.
Wow, I might secretly like his directing.
He's done a lot of movies that I'm a fan of. That's for sure.
I like, although apparently he was not nice to Dolly Parton. So
yes, now, and I was watching a behind the scenes thing on Footloose, and Sarah Jessica Parker, it was an interview with her, and she was saying that, you know, it was a lot of, because he was a choreographer, there were some choreographed pieces in the movie. She said she had done ballet like her whole life up until making the movie, but she was always the last one to learn. So she's like, I was a very slow learner. I was good, but I was always the last one to kind of learn stuff. And she said, and her quote was, we all knew how demonstrative he could be, so I didn't want to be on his bad side. So she didn't really say it as bad as we heard about he was on Steel Magnolias, but obviously he was still a pretty
tyrant,
demanding director for sure. Mm-hmm. So any films on his list that you're a fan of, JB, or familiar with?
I mean, I'm a fan of anything with Michael J. Fox. So
yeah, Secret of My Success is one of my favorites. One of his more underrated comedies, of course.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's jump into casting. I don't have a whole lot to cover because there's really only a few main characters in the movie that we kind of focus on. So we'll be able to get through these pretty quick. So of course we got Kevin Bacon as Wren McCormick. I really want to know what Wren's full name was. Like, Wren was always an interesting name for me. Is it Reynold or Ronaldo or
Ronaldo? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Renfield.
Renfield. There you go. We'll take that one. So Kevin Bacon made his feature film debut in National Lampoon's Animal House in 1978. He then starred in Friday the 13th in 1980 and then Diner in 1982 before landing the role for this movie in 84. He also starred in movies like JFK in 1991, A Few Good Men in 92, Apollo 13 in 95, Mystic River in 2003, Frost Nixon in 2008, one of my favorites, Tremors in 1990, The River Wild in 1994, Crazy Stupid Love in 2011, X-Men First Class in 2011, and Patriots Day in 2016. And that's just a small sampling of all the movies that he's been involved in. He's a very prolific actor for sure. And we've covered him in Friday the 13th when we covered that movie as well. Favorite Kevin Bacon performance?
This one.
This one?
This one.
What about you, JB?
I could probably go back and forth between this and A Few Good Men.
Yeah, yeah.
He just nails that one out of the park. And I really like his, I mean, it's not even, I can't say it's a Kevin Bacon performance, but I really like his role in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
right.
It's just, oh, it's so great.
Yeah, good cameo there, for sure.
Yeah, super bit part there, but yeah.
Just connecting him in the John Hughes universe for his role in She's Having a Baby. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, A Few Good Men is probably one of my favorite movies of all time anyway, so he's great. Fun fact about that him and Kiefer Sutherland actually, they switched roles during filming, so they were actually cast for the other person's role, which I can't even imagine that now. Like, they're perfectly cast how they are now, but yeah, Kevin Bacon's great. I can't really think of any bad Kevin Bacon movies. Like, there's never been one that I saw and was like, this is just terrible, that I
the
could
one
think
where
of.
He was the Invisible Man,
Hollow
that
Man
one was pretty bad. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah. And you know what?
He's not bad. It's just not a good movie.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that movie all the way through. Like, I'll start it and I get like 30 minutes in. I'm like, I just can't take anymore. It's just bad. Yeah, you're right. I stand corrected. That one's pretty terrible.
I'll say
fresh
that
on my brain.
Yeah.
Although the first one, the one that he was in, is probably the best. As a whole, the Friday the 13th series is pretty dang bad, though.
I think Laramie would probably disagree with you there.
They just get worse and worse. Like, yeah.
I just don't like slasher movies. So that's.
I will say, yeah, but let's be honest. The Tremors sequels were probably worse than the Friday the 13th.
Oh, the Tremors sequels are terrible, but that first movie
is awesome. Yeah, it's awesome.
That was my introduction to Kevin Bacon.
Was it really?
The Tremors movie. I loved that movie.
That is, yeah. I know that's a movie I've seen so many times. And I just watched that one again a couple of years ago. I think it was on Netflix. And it was like 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, I need something to fall asleep to. I was like, oh my gosh, Tremors on. I watched Tremors. I was up to like, 1 o'clock in the morning. I was like, I have to watch it all the way through. And then I think I started Tremors 2 and I was like, I can't. I just can't even.
I can't look, do it.
You got Kevin Bacon. You got Reba.
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 Right. And the dad from Growing Pan, Growing Family Ties. Yeah. Michael Gross. Gross. Is it Gross or Gross? I'm sure he prefers Gross. Yeah.
I think Animal House was probably my first introduction to Kevin Bacon.
I have never seen Animal House all the way through.
Man. I don't think I've seen it all the way through.
Yeah. Well, you know, JB's a real cinephile, so he's seen all these. He likes his older movies. He watches all the classics. So
try to.
Interesting to know, Tom Cruise and Rob Lowe were highly considered to play the lead of Ren. The casting directors were impressed with Cruise because of the famous underwear dance sequence in Risky Business, mm-hmm. but he was unavailable for the part because he was filming All the Right Moves. Lowe auditioned 3 times and had dancing ability and the quote-unquote neutral teen look that the director wanted, but he injured himself during one of the dance rehearsals, forcing him to not take the part. Bacon had been offered the main role for the Stephen King film Christine at the same time that he was asked to do the screen test for Footloose. He chose to take the gamble on the screen test, which I read was mostly because John Carpenter really encouraged him to do it. He said he knew he was going to be a big star. He was like, Footloose will make you a star. This will be good, but you've done horror before, so you don't get kind of pigeonholed. After watching his earlier film Diner, the director Herbert Ross persuaded the producers to go with Bacon. And he told the story that I guess Herbert Ross persuaded the producers. So the director, the producers, and the writer all liked him, but whoever the head of the studio didn't think he was quote unquote sexy enough for the lead. And so he had to do like a full screen test. And then they said they did like this 20-minute screen test. The studio head watched like 30 seconds of it and said, okay, you guys can hire him. It's fine with me.
They watched him for 30 seconds and went like, never mind. He's definitely sexy enough.
You're good. Yeah. Kevin Bacon based his hairstyle on rocker Sting's spiky hairdo as he was a big fan of the Police at the time. You mentioned the band in one of the scenes. Where are they? Right behind you.
Right behind you.
Laurie Singer as Ariel Moore. Singer was a musical prodigy, making her debut as a cellist with the Oregon Symphony at 13 and accepted to Juilliard, where she became the institution's youngest graduate. In the early 80s, she signed with Elite Model Management before shifting her focus to acting. She was cast as Julie Miller, a teenage dancer and cellist in the TV series Fame, in which she appeared between 1982 and 83. She gained notice for the lead role in this. She later was cast in supporting roles in The Falcon and the Snowman in 85, the comedy The Man with One Red Shoe with Tom Hanks in 85, the horror film Warlock in 1989, and Robert Altman's ensemble drama Shortcuts from 1993. Yeah, I forget that Laurie Singer was in the TV show Fame because that was a big show that we watched as a family when I was younger. So, but yeah, I remember her being in that TV show, at least for that show ran for like several years, but I guess she was only on for 2 of the years it was on. But
was it like the 80s version of Glee or
no? Not really. No. I mean, you know, it's based on the movie Fame that came out in 1980. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it's, performing arts school. But it wasn't just focused on like, you know, Glee is just the Glee Club. Like this was like, you had the dance students, the drama students, the band, it's like, it was all those different things, the teachers as well. So it was that's a show I wish I could find somewhere streaming. I'd love to go back and watch that from the beginning because I remember really liking that. It got a little hokey towards the end.
Glee.
Yeah, like Glee, yeah. Glee was so good the first like 2 seasons and then
so good.
It was really good, yeah.
Yeah. So rumor, I put this in italics, rumor, because I don't know how much of this is actually accurate, but some sources claim that Daryl Hannah turned down the offer to play Ariel in order to play Madison in Splash in 83. Elizabeth McGovern turned down the role of Ariel in order to play Deborah Gelly in Once Upon a Time in America in 84. Other people who were offered or auditioned for the role, here's the list. Madonna, Valerie Bertinelli, Melanie Griffith, Michelle Pfeiffer, Jamie Lee Curtis, Rosanna Arquette, Meg Tilly, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Heather Locklear, Meg Ryan, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Jodie Foster, Phoebe Cates, Tatum O'Neill, Bridget Fonda, Lori Loughlin, Diane Lane, and Brooke Shields.
So like all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe maybe 3 of those.
I mean, Phoebe Cates had to have been somebody that they contacted.
Probably.
She was just, yeah.
I could see Madonna auditioning, you know, trying to kind of make her name. Well, that was really before she became really a big pop star, but, you know, she was wanting to do acting.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones, I'm like, I don't know.
Maybe it could have been one of those things where it was like an all-call audition.
Yeah.
And those people auditioned because they were told to.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
None of them were genuinely considered.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Like I could see Daryl. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was saying I could see Daryl Hannah because she has kind of the same look somewhat as Laurie Singer. So I can kind of see that one. But everybody else, I'm like, not really.
Some of them seem a little bit old for that part.
Yeah. Even I was thinking the same thing too. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I would love to have seen Meg Ryan though.
Yeah. Sometimes I see these lists and I think people just, okay, who are famous people around this time? And they just throw them in there to see who's going to believe it. Yeah. Did you guys like Laurie Singer in the role? I mean,
I did. Yeah. I mean,
she was fine.
Yeah.
She was all right. Yeah.
She had really great moments. And especially I felt like the moments between her and John Lithgow were the most interesting that she had. I don't know if she necessarily had a ton of chemistry with Kevin Bacon. Like, I didn't quite understand why the two of them were together. But between her and John Lithgow, like, those scenes were really, like, you can't stop watching them.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
I was just going to say, I think if they would have gone with somebody that was more famous at the time, it just would not have felt right. Like, I felt like you kind of believed her as this, you know, preacher's daughter, like, as you said earlier, like just this normal down home girl trying to break out of it. But yeah, the fact that she hadn't been in a ton of stuff, I think she fit the role perfectly.
She's not my favorite part of the movie, but I mean, she's not terrible, but I just think I agree with you. I think I don't really see the chemistry between her and Kevin Bacon at all. Like, it's just not really as there as much as you would think it needs to be, but I agree. Her scenes with John Lithgow are really, really good.
Like, there are moments when, like, when she's sneaking into the house and she's, like, running up the stairs and he comes down. And it's very subtle, but she does, like, a couple steps back and lowers her head. And even though that scene ends with her, like, finally snapping back, it's so interesting. You really see that dynamic between the two of them. Like, you can tell that first scene where she's trying to talk to him and keeps chickening out, you can tell there's a lot of love between the two of them. You get so much from that conversation when nothing is really said. And so I really appreciated what she did in those scenes.
Yeah. I would think her best scene to me, and this doesn't fall into like my favorite scenes. I'm not jumping ahead, but the scene with her in the church, like towards the end, when she really confronts her dad, like that's a powerful, powerful scene that I think the two of them really worked off each other. Like that felt very real. Like it didn't, I mean, she was a little over the top, but it needed to be. Like it just, that was such a good scene. All right. Since we mentioned him already, John Lithgow as Reverend Shaw Moore, Shaw as a first name. Once again, these names are just funny to me. Ariel is the only one that seems normal so far, but anyway, especially when like his wife, Shaw. Just put an N on the end. It's Sean. Give him Sean.
There you go.
Lithgow's early roles include All That Jazz in 79 and Blowout in 81 before he received Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor nominations for his roles in The World According to Garp in 82 and Terms of Endearment in 83. His other notable films, a few of them, because he's been in a ton of things like Kevin Bacon, include Twilight Zone the movie in 83, Harry and the Hendersons in 87, Raising Cain in 92, Cliffhanger in 93, A Civil Action in 98, Shrek in 2001, Interstellar in 2014, Bombshell in 2019, and most recently Killers of the Flower Moon in 2023.
So just a few things.
Just a few things.
Really, really a low-key.
But I would put him and Kevin Bacon, I think, are both really good actors that don't get pigeonholed in a certain type of role. Like they both play great villains. Like I love when Kevin Bacon plays a bad guy, but also really great in like the everyman kind of roles as well. But I mean, Of course, Lithgow's done more bad guy stuff, but he's great in comedy. Like when he was on Third Rock from the Sun, the TV show.
I mean,
masterclass.
That was my introduction. That was my introduction to John Lithgow. Third Rock from the Sun. I loved that show.
Still funny. Oh, yeah. I'll catch reruns every once in a while, and still makes me laugh. Few funny story, or one funny story, and one kind of inspiring story here about John Lithgow. So, for this film, not being a man of faith himself, Lithgow sought a minister's advice to better understand his character. He found one in the Yellow Pages, ironically breaking the Ninth Commandment as he reached out, pretending to be lonely and asking for comfort in conversations about faith. Although Lithgow says he felt bad for misleading the minister, he found the experience invaluable in helping him shape his character. And pretty smart, but yeah, it's like
that could have gone really sideways. Like, what if he had picked somebody really
right?
First thing I think of, and this is just like, as you said, a masterclass in comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's where he really shines, is in comedy, mm-hmm. in my opinion. But the one thing that I always remember when I think of John Lithgow, any movie that I'm watching him in, is his role in, did you just see the movie Orange County?
From like 2003
or something? Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. But
when he found out that when his son told him that he wanted to become a writer, he said, "A writer? What do you want to be a writer for? You're not depressed. You're not gay."
I love it so much.
And the funny part of that is a writer wrote that. That's what's so funny.
Probably because his dad said something similar to him.
Very similar. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a kind of line that he would say, like, and you could hear it coming from him. I mean, just it works for that. Yeah, so
good.
I thought this was cool. So during the filming of Dr. Solomon's Traveling Alien Show in 1998, one of the characters playing a circus strongman took John Lithgow aside to share a personal story with him. He confided that he was from a small town in Louisiana where his own father, a Baptist minister, would not allow the kids to dance or listen to rock and roll music. When he saw Footloose, he explained that Lithgow's reverend was the epitome of his own father. After he brought his father to see the film without any warning of its plot, his father was so touched by Lithgow's performance, the man said that he was the first of six children that were permitted to attend their high school prom.
Aww, that's really nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Even though he lied to a minister to give that to give that performance.
Oh, I'm sure the minister understood and appreciated it later.
Yeah. Moving right along, Diane Wiest as Vi Moore, I'm sure is short for Vivian. That's just going to take a stab at that one. Everybody's got shortened names.
Yeah.
She has won two Academy Awards for Best Supporting Actress for 1986's Hannah and Her Sisters and 1994's Bullets Over Broadway, both directed by Woody Allen. One Golden Globe Award for Bullets Over Broadway. In addition, she was nominated for an Academy Award for 1989's Parenthood, another great movie that she was in.
Mm-hmm.
Other film appearances by Wiest include The Purple Rose of Cairo in 85, Radio Days in 87, The Lost Boys in 87, Bright Lights, Big City in 88, another Michael J. Fox movie, Edward Scissorhands in 1990, Little Man Tate in 91, The Birdcage in 96, Woo! One of Bethany's favorites, Practical Magic in 98, and Dan in Real Life in 2007. So,
I love her so much.
Yeah. One other podcast I listened to, Buzz in the Tower, they have crowned her as the greatest on-screen mom of the 80s. Which I can't really deny that. You know, the mom in this movie, the mom in Lost Boys, the mom in Parenthood, those three being their main reasons for giving that. And even the mom in Edward Scissorhands, but that's 1990, but yep.
She is just
count it.
You can count it, yeah.
It was probably shot in the 80s.
Yeah, that's what we say.
She was a mom in Birdcage. And she's so precious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. But
so was Nathan Lane. And he was also a precious mom in Birdcage. I just love her in this movie. She has she's so quiet at the beginning where you almost don't even notice she's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then as tension starts to build between Shaw and Ariel, she finally starts speaking up. The things she has to say are so poignant. And I think that's when he really starts to take his journey realize, like, hey, maybe I've taken this a step too far.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially once they start getting into the book burning stuff, he starts to realize like the monster he's created with this town. And and I don't think he would have come to that realization if it weren't for how she handles it. And it's just so like powerful. She's very subtle, very quiet.
All right. Do you have any thoughts, JB, on Diane Weiss? Any performances that stand out for you?
I mean, my first introduction to her was Edward Scissorhands. And I remember watching that a lot growing up. Yeah, it's something that that's a good role for her. And one that's not a whole lot of people talk about, but Dan in real life is such a great movie.
It's really good.
Yeah. It's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And her role in it is really good. Like, she's like the older, like, grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I really liked her in that. And I really liked that movie. So, yeah, she's just, as you said, like the perfect 80s mom.
All right, and then we'll talk about Chris Penn as Willard. He was the brother of actor Sean Penn and musician Michael Penn. Noted as a skilled character actor, he was typically cast as a tough character, featured as a villain or a working class thug or in comic role. He had roles in films such as The Wildlife, Reservoir Dogs, Rush Hour, Corky Romano, True Romance, Beethoven Second, All the Right Moves, At Close Range, Pale Rider, and the TV version of Starsky and Hutch. But he did pass away, sadly. 2006, I think, is when he passed away. Yeah, it was, I think, a cardiac arrest. So.
Oh, that's so sad. I didn't realize he was Sean Penn's brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remembered that from like early days that he was related to Sean Penn. But what I loved, the scenes where Chris Penn's character had to learn how to dance were added to the script because Penn really could not dance.
Those are some of my favorite, like, that's probably one of my favorite montage scenes.
Yes.
In any movie. Like, it's so good.
Yeah. And when I watched this for the first time 2 years ago, it was like really, he fit that part so well because I can't remember which one I saw first between Reservoir Dogs and Pale Rider. But those two movies, his characters in those movies, like, you can see how a guy like that could not know how to dance. And like, so he fit it so well. So,
there was an interview in the behind the scenes on the Blu-ray of him talking about the audition. And he said that his dad told him to take the role before he read the script. So he knew nothing about the movie. And so he showed up for a quote unquote rehearsal in like combat boots, like, you know, just and smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee. And they're like, hey, you need to put on some tennis shoes. He's like, I've never been to an audition or a rehearsal where you had, you know, shoes were a requirement. They're like, well, this is a dance audition. He's like, once again, haven't read the script, don't know what this movie is. And he said he basically told them, yeah, I don't know how to dance. And so that's when they decided they were going to have to kind of add that little section, which once I like you, that's one of my, like that is one of my favorite scenes, that montage scene of Kevin Bacon teaching him how to dance is one of my favorites for sure.
And the chemistry he has with Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
It's just off the charts. Like, the scenes of the two of them together, you believe they are friends. And like when they first meet, like their interactions and just, it's the best meet cute. It is my favorite relationship in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. They have more chemistry than him and Laurie Singer.
Absolutely. They do.
That's so funny. Good. He shows up in combat boots and smoking a cigarette. That's that's the Chris Penn that I know. So
He was like, I blame my dad. He wouldn't let me read the script. But I also read like when they were thinking of the character of Willard, I think the writer said he had Chris Penn in mind. So they kind of beefed up that role for him to take it. So all right, then let's talk about Sarah Jessica Parker as Rusty. Ooh. What a great name for a girl. Rusty, which makes me think of Rusty from Vacation movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rusty, right here, dog.
So but it fits her little character so well. It's so cute.
I think this was the first time watching. Well, I don't remember the last time watching it, but like I knew who Sarah Jessica Parker was, but now because she's such a big star from Sex and the City and all that kind of stuff, Like, I didn't realize how much she was in this movie. Like, she had really was a serious character. Like, I was doing the research. I was like, oh, yeah, she's in this movie. She must have, like, a little small part. But she's very, you know, she has a pretty pretty decent role in the movie. But she made her first major film appearances in 1984 with Footloose and First Born. Her other film roles include L.A. Story in 1991, Honeymoon in Vegas in 92, Hocus Pocus in 93, Ed Wood in 94, The First Wives Club in 96, The Family Stone in 2005, Failure to Launch in 2006, Did You Hear About the Morgans in 2009, New Year's Eve in 2011, and of course, Hocus Pocus 2 in 2022.
I grew up on...
Don't forget Flight of the Navigator, man. You're the 80s guy.
Yeah.
No, I love the Hocus Pocus movies. Like, that first, I was like prime age when Hocus Pocus came out. And loved it. And then my mom was obsessed with the First Wives Club. And so funny. Mm-hmm. Like, so underrated and funny in that movie. It is such a good movie.
And then, obviously,
Sex in the City. Big fan.
Never watched the episode.
Guys, I watched Sex in the City when I probably shouldn't have been watching Sex in the City.
I would say most men, or most young men, would probably have the same statement. Right. I've never really watched it,
but then I tried to watch it. My wife begged me to watch it with her because she's seen every episode and she owns every episode, and so I started watching it with her, and I think I made it through the first three, and I was like, I can't keep doing
this. The first season's not great. Like, once they stop doing the weird interviews on the street, it gets a lot better. My mom was a huge fan. It came on after my bedtime, and it was like mom's show, and I remember thinking how unfair that was when I was a kid. And I was just like, oh, I know it's dirty, but I think it's ridiculous that on these nights I'm rushed to bed. And then now as an adult, I'm like, she just had one show that she wanted to watch by herself.
Right. But of course, she was known at this time for the TV show Square Pegs that she was in. She was not the first choice for the part of Rusty. I have to change this because she does an interview where she was asked to play Rusty originally, but she had been doing Annie on Broadway and had cut her hair. So after doing Square Pegs, she had let her hair grow long. So when they wanted her to do the part of Rusty, they wanted her to cut her hair short again and dye it red. She's like, I just finished that. I don't want to do that. She said, so I passed. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. So after that, they hired Tracy Nelson, who played the Valley Girl Jennifer in Square Pegs and was supposed to play the part because she already had short hair anyway. The script was rewritten to make Rusty a bit rowdier and goofier, and Nelson was no longer interested. So they called Sarah back and said, will you come out and take the role of Rusty? She said, do I have to cut my hair? Like, no, just come, just get on a plane and get out here. So she arrived on set like a couple of days into filming. She admitted she had a bit of a crush on Kevin Bacon when they were filming. But nothing ever really happened. She said, we just kind of grinned at each other. The film was shot in the summer of 83, and the location was not full of exciting attractions. One night, Sarah said, the cast decided to venture out into the only theater in town, which happened to be playing the movie Breathless with Richard Gere. Everyone found it hilarious that such a conservative Utah town would allow such a racy film to be shown.
She is so good in this part.
Yeah.
She plays like more so than Ariel's character, she feels like a teenager, especially that scene where she like goes and finds her and is like telling her all the stuff she's learned about Ren.
Yeah.
I've done that with friends before and just like, okay, so here's what we know about him. He does this and da-da-da. And it just felt so genuine. And I also have to say, I love the way Sarah Jessica Parker screams. If you ever hear her scream in a movie, it's just like, that's just how have you not been in like horror movies being a scream queen? You have the best scream. She screams when they're in the bar and the guy punches him.
I'm
just like, ah, yes.
She screams in the car when Ariel's hanging onto both cars.
Oh, don't get me started on that scene. Yeah.
One thing she said was she had just turned 18. So she said making the movie was like a much about being free. Like she felt like her first time, she flew on a plane for the first time by herself. She was there, you know, with all these other young people her age or, you know, older than her. Cause I think Kevin Bacon was 24. I think Laurie Singer was probably like 21 or 22. So she was really the only, she might have been one of the only real teenagers on set with all these older people. So, yeah, I'm sure that that came across pretty well too in the filming. All right, another mom from the 80s, Frances Lee McCain as Ethel McCormick, Wren's mom. She was cast in several major films in the 80s, usually playing the mother of main character. Here we go. In 84, she co-starred in the film Gremlins as Lynn Peltzer, the mother of the main character, Billy Peltzer. She also was the mother of Kevin Bacon the same year in Footloose. In 85, she appeared in Back to the Future as Stella Baines, the mother of Lorraine Baines, played by Leah Thompson. And of course, in 1986, she played Mrs. LaChance, the mother of Gordy LaChance, Will Wheaton, in the drama film Stand By Me. Two great 80s moms in one movie. Who would have thought?
Yeah, I always kind of felt bad for her character. I kind of wonder, like, they don't go into much detail. Like, they kind of make it out to either the... I can't remember if they say specifically that they've gotten... that she's gotten divorced, or if the dad just ran off, or if he died. Like, it's not specific. Yeah.
I got the feeling the dad passed away is what I think, and that's why they were moving. But yeah, it's never really clearly defined why they moved there from Chicago. I mean, I know there was family there, I guess, but.
And then you almost get the impression like the uncle is the uncle and the aunt that they're living with are kind of judging her as a mom.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And she gets sidelined on a lot of the parenting, and she doesn't really get much to do in this movie.
Yeah.
And now these messages.
Now playing on a cell phone near you. A show for all the manly men out there, where guys talk about their favorite movies and what they can teach us about being a man. Featuring the coolest guests.
Murder somebody is not like killing an ant.
The most gratifying laughs.
It's Tombstone, what can I say?
And a fresh take on movies like you've never heard before.
This will be the thing that gets written on his proverbial tombstone.
We aren't here to criticize the movies you love, but to praise them for how they apply to our lives as husbands, fathers, and really all men in general. So buckle up your seatbelts, because Manly Movies is here. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or your other favorite podcast catcher. And remember, man up.
All right, well, let's jump into iconic scenes, favorite scenes. I think there's more than one, but I'll ask you both the same questions. If someone says Footloose, what's the first scene that pops in your head as the iconic scene?
Oh, the first scene's, oh, man.
So there's more than one, I'm sure.
Yeah. I would want to talk about the warehouse dance scene, but like that final number, though, that Let's Dance is what I'm always going to think of, like every time, every single time.
Yeah. What about you, Bethany? Iconic scene.
That's really tough. I agree with you. The prom at the end, that is so iconic. But just to say something slightly different, maybe something we haven't said yet, something that always sticks in my head, and I think it's because I'm an anxious person who always thinks of different ways to die, is the scene where Ariel is going from the car into the truck, and she does the Jean-Claude Van Damme where she stands between the two.
Right.
And just that scene stresses me out so much. And for some reason, that scene always pops in my head when I think of Footloose, in addition to all the fun dancing that we've already talked about.
Gotcha. Yeah. Iconic scene for me. Like, I agree. Well, I agree more with JB than Bethany, but
I agreed with JB too. I was just trying to say something different.
Yeah, I'm like that's not the first scene that pops in my head, but the other scene that is the montage of them, of like the especially the scene of them walking by the lockers, and Kevin Bacon's kind of snapping his fingers, and then you see Willard coming behind him like overly aggressively trying to stay in beat. Like, that scene is what pops into my head, and also the dance in the warehouse. The highly choreographed.
Never.
You've never seen Hot Rod with Andy Samberg, where he does his own like frustrating dance off to the same song, which is hilarious. One of my favorite scenes. But anyway, so yeah, those are mine. But what about favorite scenes?
I've already said it 100 times, but Willard learning to dance.
Mm-hmm.
I sit there and I watch it with this big old grin on my face. Mm-hmm. And then knowing that they did have to teach him how to dance, and mm-hmm. that's why that montage is there, is because he didn't know how to dance.
Yeah.
It just makes it all that more wholesome. And then at the end, he's so proud of himself, and he's doing such a good job. And Kevin Bacon cheers him on. And even him dancing with the little girls, that's just so cute. It's all just so cute and precious. And he's all doing it because Sarah Jessica Parker just wanted to dance.
Yeah.
And he couldn't. And he could tell that he was really disappointing her. And so he's like, no, I'm going to do it. And it's just so sweet. And it's also, Let's Hear It for the Boy is a great song.
right. Yeah. And the big payoff on that is at the prom when he takes off his jacket and does the, like the John Travolta, like so that still good. That still brings a smile to my face. Like that was a part I really enjoyed today watching again. So what about you, JB? Favorite scenes?
I have to say the opening credits where it just shows the shoes.
Yeah.
And they're all dancing in their own little movements. When it comes on and you see that, like when I turned it on to rewatch it, like you see that going, like, man, you know right then and there,
you're
in for a treat, man. Like this is going to be fun. This is going to be dancing. This is going to be like good times and being free. And so just
a little silly,
it's just
a
really, really cool. Like opening, credit scene for me. Like I love it.
What's your favorite shoes?
Ooh, that's something I didn't think about.
My favorite is the high heel that almost goes all the way around.
Oh,
I
yeah, yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It was
cool.
That was a good
one. Fun fact, but you know, the person wearing the gold shoes was Kenny Loggins.
Oh, really? Nice.
Over 150 different pairs of feet were shot. They contained many of the cast and crew. The dancer with the gold shoes was Kenny Loggins. That was my first trivia nugget. So
nice.
Yeah.
Can't but have an 80s movie without Kenny Loggins, can you?
Like, not without a Kenny Loggins song, anyway. Yeah. But and that's what I was gonna say. Like, they play Footloose in this movie probably, I think, at least three times, maybe four.
Yeah.
But I didn't get sick of it. Like, I could hear that song every day. Like, it's one of the greatest 80s songs.
So
not that it makes any kind lyrically makes any kind of sense, but it's just a great song.
You know, at weddings, if Kevin Bacon is at a wedding, he will tip the DJ not to play Footloose.
Exactly.
Which I would be livid.
How dare you rob me of this experience?
No, excuse you're me, Kevin sir. Bacon.
No. So I think we've kind of alluded to this. I was in the musical in high school.
Yes.
And that song played at my wedding, and the girl that played Ariel was my maid of honor.
Oh, okay.
And the guy that played the pastor, Shaw, he sang in my wedding, and that song started playing, and we all turned around and we looked at each other and we ran to the dance floor and we did our choreography. Actually, the guy who played Ren was working as a caterer, and I was like, please come dance with it. And he was like, I can't, I'm working. But yeah, we were all like, and so we've got some fun pictures of us doing the choreography from our high school musical.
There you go.
At my wedding.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know, both of my co-hosts were in a high school production of Footloose. So now that Bethany has shared her story, well, this is a good place to put it. So JB, tell us how you were brought in from the practice squad into the theater group.
Yeah, I didn't like I grew up singing in church and so everybody knew that I sang, but I played football and basketball and baseball. So I didn't have time to do like drama in high school. I mean, I guess I could have made the time and not played sports, but you know, I'm a Southerner, so I played sports. they asked me, anytime that they needed a male solo, they had guys in the choir. I don't know why they had to ask me, but they always asked me to sing. And so they asked me to come out and practice with them and do this musical thing that they were doing. I wouldn't really call it a musical. It's kind of just more like a choir production type thing. But I did sing Almost Paradise in this production. and I got to do like the final number, like the dancing scene for the Footloose, the prom scene. So that was a good time. I enjoyed it. So
in the musical, the scene where Ren is speaking to the town council, mm-hmm. that's a rap.
Okay.
And it's hilarious.
Okay.
Because it's bad. But it's great. It's so good. I always think of it as dancing is not a crime. Yeah. 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 It's so good.
So funny you should mention that. So during the scene in which everyone is being organized for the dance, you'll notice the cast is singing or their mouths are moving. That's because they actually were rapping. Herbert Ross wanted one of the sequences to be a Footloose rap, but after seeing the look on screenwriter Dean Pritchard's face and what he had to say after the screening of the scene, the rap was dropped.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, let's jump into some scenes of trivia. We've gone long already, and it can only get longer. With the principal's knowledge, 24-year-old Kevin Bacon attended the Payson, Utah High School as Ren McCormick, a transfer student from Philadelphia, to help get him into the role. With his narrow tie and new wave haircut, he was treated pretty much like he was treated in the film. Bacon gratefully left with the location scouts on the afternoon of the first day. So he was not, not welcomed.
He got teased.
Yes.
Oh, man. Talk about some method acting.
Right.
Can you imagine being the teenagers that bullied Kevin Bacon as he was preparing for his role in Footloose?
Right.
Growing up and saying, like, I bullied him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was telling the story. He said when he first got there, he was like, everybody kind of looked at him weird, and he said he went in the bathroom and kind of got pushed around by some corn-fed guys. But then he met someone very much like Willard that kind of like took him under his wing and like, you know, showed him around. So he said it was a lot of art imitating life in that day. So I guess it wasn't all bad. You talked about the scene where he's talking for the town council. Would you believe the real life Kevin Bacon was terribly nervous during the first part of filming and had to take anti-anxiety pill to calm himself down? He actually broke out into hives on his chest and had to take half a Valium to combat the nerves. So he said he was fine acting, but like public speaking in front of people made him really nervous. And so that scene, but he does. So that's one of the great scenes. Like it's,
but that reads so well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's so good.
My favorite part is when he's talking, he was like, what does it say? What does it say? What does it say?
What did David do?
Yeah, that's what. Yeah. What did David do? David danced. Yeah. That's just great. And there's those little subtle things are really great. Like the other little subtle thing that I thought was great is when he picks Ariel up for the prom and he's trying to be all smooth and he goes to open the car door and it's locked and he runs around and he unlocks it. Wait.
So
yeah.
Cute.
Yeah. I thought it was one of those, just a great little, you know, just a piece there just to keep it light and just to show, you know, that's what teenagers do. That's very, very relatable. All right. So do you know about Footloose's original ending?
I knew it was different and they had to re-record it.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, based on early audience feedback, it was nixed and replaced by the energetic dancing scene we now know, which was shot nearly a year later. In an Entertainment Weekly interview in 2022, Bacon talked about the original conclusion in which he runs into the room and says, "Let's dance." Then after a brief moment of dancing, the camera goes into slow motion while glitter falls from above. During test screenings, producers realized that the audience wanted to get up and dance, so they shot a new choreographed scene with hired dancers from Los Angeles. The long gap between the conclusions of filming and the start of reshoots would explain the conspicuous absence of the young Sarah Jessica Parker, who plays Rusty in one of her earliest movie roles. So she is there in that one scene where Willard starts to dance, but you can tell, like watching it today, I was like, it's very evident, like you've got professional dancers. Cause when I was kind of joking, I was like, if I watch this for the first time today, I'd be like, okay, all these kids were closeted dancers because they're breakdancing. They're doing these like highly skilled, like they were all breaking the law in their basements, you know?
I think that's why that was part of the reason why my stepmom liked to break in was she thought it was hilarious that these kids who have never been allowed to dance before are now all of a sudden professional dancers.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But that was my favorite part. Like, of course, I was big into breakdancing. So watching the kid doing the breakdancing, that was when we all waiting. Like when it came on cable, we would watch the whole movie just to get to that part to see the kid breakdance at the end. Like that was we were all kind of waiting for. So that was great. In his bio,
I'm picturing you breakdancing right now, by the way.
Me? No, I didn't say I broke dance. I like to watch it. I was terrible at it.
I break something when I dance.
And my mom, you know, of course, you know, the big fear, don't do that. You can break your spine, or you try to do the head spin, you're going to break your neck. Some kid in Oklahoma, you know, it was always some kid that was 1,000 miles away that broke their neck. Anyway,
I was reading a bio about Shaquille O'Neal, and it said that when he was younger, he used to do breakdancing. And I'm like, I cannot see this big giant of a man spinning on his head.
Right.
Like,
right.
Kicking people over, like
spins his legs around, knocks everybody out.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Gosh.
Sorry. Go on YouTube and find the old Vin Diesel, breakdancing instruction videos. Pretty funny. All right, last trivia. In his biopic, Still All Right, Kenny Loggins explained that the final scene where the kids dance at their prom night, the actors weren't actually dancing to the song Footloose, but they were actually dancing to Chuck Berry's Johnny Be Good.
Oh, and yep, then yep, Marvin yep. called, and he's like,
it's your cousin,
it's your cousin Marvin.
You know that new sound you've been looking for? Listen to this.
Listen to this.
Yeah. I've got to talk about it. We'll do it kind of quick. The soundtrack. You can't talk about this movie without talking about the soundtrack. Yeah. So it was released on cassette, 8-track tape, vinyl, reel-to-reel, and CD format. That's amazing. The 84 open reel release was among the last commercial released in the format. The soundtrack was also re-released on CD for the 15th anniversary of the film in 1999. The re-release included 4 new songs or other songs that were already out at the time. Bang Your Head by Quiet Riot, Hurt So Good by John Mellencamp, Waiting for a Girl Like You by Foreigner. So the original album includes Footloose and I'm Free, Heaven Help the Man, both by Kenny Loggins. I'm not going to read all the names, but it's went on to sell over 9 million copies in the USA. All songs in the initial release were co-written by the screenwriter, Pitchford, based on various songwriting styles. For Holding Out for a Hero, he listened to various songs written by Steinman, such as his work with Meatloaf, which makes sense. Yeah. The music from the soundtrack was released prior to the film's premiere. The filmmakers felt the songs produced a stronger emotional response from people already familiar with them, which heightened the experience of watching the movie. The music video for Footloose had scenes from the movie instead of actual footage of Loggins singing the song, which I remember that as a kid. Like Kenny Loggins wasn't in it at all. It was all just scenes from the movie. I'm still amazed the screenwriter co-wrote every song on that soundtrack. That's amazing to me.
What's your favorite song from the soundtrack?
Holding Out for a Hero is my favorite.
So
hands
good.
Down, easily.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why too. Like, obviously I grew up listening to this song. As I said, even before the movie, I've listened to that soundtrack over and over and over again. But when I took my kids to see the Super Mario Brothers movie last year, during the montage of Mario's training, that song is being played. And so now my kids love that song. And so it's one of their favorite ones to listen to in the car. So I'm like, oh, heck yeah, you want to listen to that? All right, we'll throw some Bonnie Tyler on in this car. We got this.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, it just makes it so much more special now that my kids love that song. So and anytime I hear it, it's just like it pumps me up, and I love that song so much.
Yeah,
makes you want to jump out of your friend's car and into your boyfriend's truck, right?
Exactly.
I've always been partial to "I'm Free, Heaven Helps the Man." I don't know why. I don't say I like it better than Footloose, but Footloose was because everybody knew that one. That was like the, you know, the other one that like the B side that was like just as good as the A side to me.
Yeah.
But I love Never. I liked Almost Paradise, probably one of the best, you know, love ballads of the 80s for sure.
So good.
Yeah. What about you? What was your favorite?
Oh man. Well, everything y'all mentioned, obviously. And then also Let's Hear It for the Boy. It's just such a bop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does make you want to get up and dance. Like it's such a fun song. It's just poppy and you just want to spin around and sing at the top of your lungs. I think this is the soundtrack I'm going to listen to on my way to work tomorrow to get me excited to be at work on Monday.
For sure.
It's a good one to pull back out. Yeah.
I guess I'm required to say that I really, really like Almost Paradise, since I did sing that.
So were there like, so in the musical version, is it just all songs from the soundtrack, or is there other songs not from the movie that are included as well that you can remember?
For the most part, they're songs from the soundtrack. Like all of the ones you mentioned, I don't think Never is in it, but okay. The rest of them were. And then I think the only one that wasn't a jukebox song is the rap that they do.
Right. All right, let's jump into box office critical reception and wrap this puppy up. Footloose was released on February 17th, 1984, during the President's Day weekend. It debuted at number one at the box office, beating out the other new releases, Lassiter with Tom Selleck at number two, and Blame It on Rio at number four. Footloose won three weekends amid slim competition before ceding the top spot to the debuting Splash. It would remain in the top 10 more or less uninterrupted until June, finishing as the seventh top grossing film of the year. So think about that, from February to June.
That's crazy.
It was still the theater. Wow. In a blockbuster soaked 1984, that was quite an accomplishment. The only films to do better were Beverly Hills Cop, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Gremlins, The Karate Kid, and believe it or not, Police Academy made more money than Footloose for the year. The $80 million total bank for Footloose would roughly translate to about $205 million today.
So you're saying if my stepmom had just paid for the tickets, she could have maybe beat out Police Academy?
It's all her fault. All right, critical reception, Rotten Tomatoes, 55% on the tomato meter and a 71% audience score. IMDb, 6.6 out of 10 with viewers and a 42 on Metacritic. Not a fan of the critics for sure, but where does this fall for you guys? Is it in the 70s, 80s, 90s out of 100?
It's somewhere in the 80s for me.
Okay.
It's one that I really enjoy and want to throw on, but
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not up there in that upper echelon for me, but it's definitely right. Pretty close. So
what about you, Bethany?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree. High 80s, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's such a fun movie. It is silly. Like the premise of it, it's a silly movie. And there are mm-hmm. parts of it that you're just like, okay, calm mm-hmm. down. It's dancing. But like but it at the end of the day, it really does speak to like teens and how they feel about if they become passionate about something, mm-hmm. it does become the end of the world. And yeah. so mm-hmm. I enjoy it. It's a fun movie.
It's funny you said that, because that was in my initial review when I first watched it. It's like it really brought me back to how simple everything was when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and like carefree and things that get you all wound up absolutely don't mean anything at all. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
yeah, not that big of a deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. That's also why I love coming of age stories too, just because it mm-hmm. kind of it's a throwback.
And it's also mm-hmm. timeless. It's so timeless. Even
oh yeah,
doesn't really matter what decade it's written. The human experience is so similar throughout time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing I read about this that really got me thinking too, like because this was set in a small town with teenagers, that was a big departure from like the John Hughes. Because, you know, his was like Chicago and like, you know, it was more city kids. There may be suburb, you know, even suburb kids is different than, you know, Utah, you know, or, you know, yeah. middle America. And that's when, like Kevin Bacon talked about, he had never been to middle America before he filmed this movie. So he said he got off the plane in Salt Lake City and he was like, wow, this is completely different than what I'm used to. So he's like, it was kind of good for him to be put in that kind of, you know, different place. So it does kind of separate it from like the John Hughes movies. It's in the one thing like watching it today I liked about the movie is, yeah, it is silly. It has silly moments, but there's a lot of drama. Like it really plays as a drama with some of these kind of like, you know, fantasy type dance, you know, the whole thing in the warehouse. Even Kevin Bacon's like, you know, it starts off and putting the cassette tape in the car, which is very real. He said, but then once he gets outside the car, it's all fantasy after that until, you know, so it's almost like what you're seeing is what he's doing in his mind. He's not really actually doing any of that dance stuff. It's just how he sees himself. All that to say, yeah, high 80s for me. It's highly rewatchable. It's not the greatest movie. It's not the greatest 80s movie ever made, but highly rewatchable, very entertaining.
It's so fun. I just love it.
Yeah, it's easy to watch an iconic 80s movies like this. Like even watching it for the first time 2 years ago, it's easy to watch something like that and be like, okay, yeah, this is way overrated. People talk about this way too much.
But, oh, yeah.
You know, but when I watched it, like it absolutely holds up, you know, 40 years later. So
I think it holds up better than a lot of 80s movies, even with the fashion and, you know, even the music, would some people would say is dated, but the music was so, still takes you back. The music itself is nostalgic because the soundtrack was so well played by everybody that I remember every song. Of course, I had the soundtrack listened over and over again, but every song that came up, even if it was just for like 30 or 40 seconds of the song, I was like, oh man, I remember listening to that or jamming to that with my friends. So,
Well, I think there's a reason why the song Footloose is still played pretty frequently, like events and stuff. Like, it's a great song. A lot of those songs are just really good and well written, and they fit so well into the moments. And it's just, they make you feel excited like you did when you were a teenager. Like, everything makes you excited. And it's just, it's so good. Maybe I'll give it a 90 just for that.
Just for that. It took it to the 90s. All right. Well, before we wrap all the way up, let me give our 80s flick flashback feedback. This one comes from Rock Mastrangelo. I'm butchering his last name, but I've talked to Rock a couple of times on social media. He's one of our social media guys, but he did leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with the title So Much 80s Goodness. Here's what Rock had to say. I really love the podcast. I grew up in the 80s, so this brings back so many great memories. The hosts not just go over the movie in great detail, but they add personal stories about whether they saw it in the theaters or remember renting it. This podcast is like a time machine for me. Being 46 years old, when I listen to this show, I remember the thrill of seeing some of these movies when they were definitely too young, when I was definitely too young to see them. Go ahead and download and subscribe to the show. You won't be disappointed. Thank you so much, Rock, for the great review. Appreciate that, and hope you take his advice to download and subscribe to the show. So I want to thank my wonderful co-host, Bethany and JB. Thank you guys both so much for joining me today. Had a great time with you guys.
Thank you for having us, Tim.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting us. It was a good time.
All right, folks, that's a wrap on this episode of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. If you enjoy the show as much as Rock does, then show us some love by dropping a stellar written review and slapping a shiny 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and spread the word to your fellow 80s flick loving friends. If you have burning questions or want to shoot the breeze, hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And if you're feeling extra gnarly, consider supporting the show over at buymeacoffee.com for as little as $5 a month. And why not deck yourself out in some rad 80s flick flashback gear? Check out our online store at 80sflickflashback.com, as well as tpublic.com for all the nostalgic swag your heart desires. Just dropped some new designs this week, so definitely check those out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, you guys, for joining me. I'm Tim Williams for the 80s Flick Flashback. Let's dance.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.